Jackson Radio Show.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
How do we get out of this massive economic downturn? You're listening to The Kevin Jackson Show. Charles Love, sitting in for Kevin Jackson. Follow me on Twitter, CDouglasLove3. On Facebook, Charles Love. Check out our site, SeekingEducationalExcellence.org. So how do we get out of this? We know that the problems that we are currently facing were created by the government. We know that the government is just not built to fix these kind of things. It is the private sector, these small businesses that need to be the engine that runs the country. The problem is the government has flexed its muscles and exercised all of its power and some of the power it doesn't have. So now these businesses are handicapped and can't move. And because of the hysteria, Trump can only do so much. We're so close to an election that people are in wait and see mode. He loses. Biden's not going to do anything to make it better. So these are scary times for the economy. So what do you do? I mean, how far can the government go? How far do we the people or do the business owners push back? That's all going to be the key to determining where this thing goes. I see here in New York, give you an example of the overreach. I wish you could see it. I asked you to Google this. I think it was a couple of days ago where the mayor said he was going to crack down on businesses who were serving alcohol and not practicing social distancing and things of that nature. He had like a three strike rule, and after three strikes, you lose your liquor license or whatever. So on this particular day, they went down and they, you have to watch it. You can't just listen. You need to see the images. It's, I don't know, 8, 9 police cars, some vans, lights flashing like they go into a crime scene, a major, you know, crime where there's lots of carnage. And they pull up and they line up in the middle of the street, leave the flashes on, and the police officers get out. And it's a strip where there's restaurants, you know, the type where there's restaurants next door to door. So they get out and then they're going into the businesses and they're just checking for violations, writing summons. And all these business owners are like, we're already hurting from Corona. We just barely got back open. We are needling by and barely, many of us can't afford it. And we're just doing enough to give us buy some time to wait and see if we're actually going to survive or close. And now you've given us $1,000 and sometimes more summons because, and here's the thing, even if I give the government the argument and say that that's the problem, and that we need to stop this. Hear me out here. You were giving me, the owner of Kung Pao Chicken, a summons because my customers are standing next to each other. What do you want me to do about it? How do I stop them? Put up a sign and say, don't stand next to each other? I'm pretty sure these businesses have done that. So how far, not only is the government, when we say the government's overreaching, but how far do you want the citizens to do it? You're creating the citizens' police that you said, for example, in the Aubrey case, were bad for society. But we're asking people to do that. There's a woman here who was unfortunately murdered because Eric Adams, the president of the Brooklyn Borough, said when the city was getting a huge number of fireworks complaints and lots of calls that they understood it was a problem, but he didn't want you calling the police because 911 is for something else. And, you know, we already have issues with the police and we don't want to create those interactions. So go talk to your neighbor yourself. So she went to the neighbor and was like, dude, I'm trying to sleep. I got kids. Can you slow down on the fireworks for me? And they killed her. But now you are incentivizing business owners to attack their own citizens, neighborhood, and customers by saying, look, I'm going to fine you $1,000 if you don't go over there and move that man to the other side of the street. So that's a problem in itself. But the point is, they're spending all these resources and they're overreaching in their power. So I ask you, you need the businesses in order to bring people back, and you need the innovation in order for people to get back to work. And in Washington, you got politicians, you got the Democrats and Republicans debating about how much this stimulus will be, and should it be $200 or $600, or how long it should be, how much money do we give the schools, which we're going to get into the schools later, but how much money do we give the schools, and all right, fine, we can give them that much, but what are they going to spend it on? All that stuff is important, not knocking that, but none of that matters, because common sense says you can't stimulus your way out of this. You can't just print money and just keep paying people and say, well, we're going to pay you this money until you can get back to work. But then on the other side, the state and the local government are going to strangle the businesses so they can't open. And then say, oh, man, it's been 5 weeks. You're still not open? All right, let's give you some more checks. So until businesses are allowed to open, you're going to have a problem. And if you keep printing money and keeping the businesses closed, then eventually you are Venezuela. You're printing the $1 million mark, and you need two of those to buy a loaf of bread. So what's the point of putting a large number on it when it has no value? You're going to continue to devalue. And when you're done, people still won't be working. So the key here is the businesses, but how can they do it? And what the government is doing, forget about COVID. I don't care if you think COVID is the most dangerous virus of all time. It doesn't matter. If it is, it's the reaction that matters. If it is, then why are we just randomly picking and choosing what businesses are open? So the virus doesn't like conservatives who want to open the business, but it's okay with Black Lives Matter protesters, so it ignores that. It likes Walmart, but it doesn't like small stores. It likes restaurants, but only if you sit outside and are eating, not drinking. You know, because they do rules like that, right? Like, I don't understand whether you have alcohol or not, what that has to do with the virus. Nothing. They're not stopping you from drinking at home yet. So here's the problem. I don't know. I'm a solutions guy, and I don't know what the solution is yet. I know that the government needs to do more and work harder at doing less. See, more or less is what I need. I need more government doing less. I need more ability for the people who own businesses to do what they do. And that's going to be the only way we see ourselves out of here. Mask, no mask, social distancing, whatever. Then if that's the solution, then you mask, social distancing, and then you go back to work. But mass social distancing and sitting at home is a recipe for disaster.
This is the Kevin Jackson Radio Show.
There's a new Home Depot now open on Maurice Avenue in Maspeth. And as home improvement projects go, this is a big one. Use the product locator on our app for an in-store map to find what you need fast. And check out our new pickup lockers. They make online shopping a breeze. Of course, one thing's not new. Our everyday low prices. The Home Depot, now open near Maurice Avenue and Long Island Expressway in Maspeth, and always open at homedepot.com. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
This is the Kevin Jackson Radio Show.
And it didn't cost us a dime.
Yesterday, I told you about the 1619 Project, its dangers, and how you needed to educate yourself and be prepared. You're listening to The Kevin Jackson Show, thekevinjacksonshow.com. Charles loves sitting in. I knew I'd have examples. Like I told you, I like to use real-life examples to kind of put a fine point on what I'm trying to explain to you. Here today in Chicago, from NBC. Chicago area leaders call for Illinois to abolish history classes. It goes on to say that State Rep. LaShawn Ford, he said that the current history teachings overlook the contributions of women and minorities. You see, history became, to the people here, part of this project, other people on the left, less about understanding history, what happened, so we can learn from it, to being an award show. See, they've watched too many politicized Oscar awards, and they think that's what history is. So human nature, the different wars, different leaders, good, bad, and the ugly, things of that nature, what happened to different cultures, different societies, the difference between the two, that's history. Saying this guy was the best at this, or this woman did this, is not the primary focus of history. And more importantly, this rep is from the west side of Chicago. I have a friend who knows him well, and she was upset about this, and she said, this man's office is on a street strewn with garbage. There are 30, 40 people shot every weekend in Chicago, and this is what his priority is. So even if he's right, again, as I give him an argument, why is this the priority? So he went on the morning show in Chicago with Dan and Amy, and Dan is vicious, and he knows his stuff. And I got to play a couple clips of this interview because you're both going to enjoy the way Dan and Amy shred him, but also his lack of ability to make a plausible explanation for what he wants. And you will understand the dangers of this type of teaching that I've been telling you about.
State Representative LaShawn Ford, who's a Democrat from the west side of the city, introduced a measure to suspend history classes in Illinois schools until the history classes are more inclusive of the accomplishments of minorities and women.
So the first thing you notice here is that they want to suspend teaching history until they get what they want. So no one learns history at any of the schools until they focus on what they want. Now, I love this part. Listen to Dan's lead-in question to the segment.
LaShawn, have you lost your mind? Have you lost your mind with this? What are you doing?
Oh, the raw honesty is hilarious. That's enough fun for now. We got to get back to the seriousness. So then LaShawn got a chance to talk, and this is him telling you what his ask is.
The simple ask is that we teach accurate history.
That didn't sound too far-fetched. Teach accurate history. I'm on board with LaShawn Ford. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should take all this back. Let's hear what he means by what's wrong with what's being taught now.
Well, we know that, one, we just stick with the fact with blacks. And what I know about the teaching of black history in Illinois schools and across the country is that the only thing that people recognize about black people is that they were slaves.
This is where I talk about giving them their argument, because they're surface thinkers. And once you point out reality to them, they're kind of lost. Dan will give him his argument and take it to the logical conclusion. But that's what it's saying. The funny thing for me, though, here, as you learn more and more about the 1619 Project, it kind of also shows that LaShawn supports it, but doesn't really know it. Because LaShawn Ford says, the only thing, I want to fix this history thing, because the only thing we all know about blacks is that they were slaves. But the 1619 Project was literally built around proving that this country is all things slavery. It's all encompassing. Its roots go into everything. No matter what the topic is, slavery's there. So for LaShawn to say, I want to stop teaching history until we teach it accurately, and then later you'll hear him support the 1619 Project, proves he doesn't really know what he's talking about. But this is how, this is textbook, both, like I said, the dangers of this infiltrating our schools and the textbook way to take their logic, supposed logic, apart.
So I agree. You know, what's interesting is actually you're persuading me. You know why? Is because what you're really complaining about is the white supremacy taught by Democrats in charge of K through 12 education in Chicago and Illinois, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely.
As conservatives, I think we owe Dan Proft a round of applause. He's just got a Democrat politician on air to admit that he's pushing back against racist Democrat policies. See, most of them can be walked there. You just got to get them there. But so see, this is the key, getting them to admit what they're really trying to do and getting them to understand that it either won't work or doesn't make sense. So he goes on into the sinister 1619 Project I've been telling you about.
We know that there's something wrong with the history teaching in this country when we have a senator. I think Cotton says that he don't believe we should spend money on teaching about the 1619 history of the 1619 trade. He says that slavery was a necessary evil. Who in the hell would say that?
See, every Democrat knows how to pivot back to the talking points and what they're supposed to talk about. He knows very little about the 1619 project. If you learn about it, that's why I want you to be armed with information, because if you knew it, then you could tell by his comments that he doesn't really know, but he supports it because the right people support it. But then also, he did what I talked about yesterday, the newspapers doing, taking things out of context. It's what they do. They take a clip, they cut some words off, and they make it a meme. So he went to the Tom Cotton thing. Tom Cotton said this about this. See, that's how you know there's slavery. And again, I mean, how there's racism. And again, to give them their argument and prove that it's not logical, even if it were true, if Tom Cotton is an out and out racist, what does that have to do with what he just said? If we're talking about what needs to be taught in school, he said to prove that we have a problem with history, Tom Cotton said something. That doesn't prove anything about history. That just proves Tom Cotton made a comment. But he tries to tie the two together poorly. So if you want to hear the rest of it, it goes on for another 3 minutes and it's great. Go to Dan and Amy at AM 560 The Answer and listen to that clip. It was marvelous. This is a textbook. It gives you another piece. I will continue to bring more and more about the 1619 Project because it's so bad. But I just talked about it yesterday, and today they came out with this thing, and it was just perfect timing. So get informed, find out about the 1619 Project, and push back against it in your school district because it's coming.
There's a new Home Depot now open on Maurice Avenue in Maspeth. And as home improvement projects go, this is a big one. Use the product locator on our app for an in-store map to find what you need fast. And check out our new pickup lockers. They make online shopping a breeze. Of course, one thing's not new: our everyday low prices. The Home Depot, now open near Maurice Avenue and Long Island Expressway in Maspeth, and always open at homedepot.com. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
This is the Kevin Jackson Radio Show.
It has to end here.
Actually, it's just gotten started.
No!
This is the Kevin Jackson Radio Show.
Schools have to reopen. Welcome to the Kevin Jackson Show. This is Charles Love sitting in for Kevin Jackson. Follow me on Twitter, CDouglasLove3. There's no doubt about it. These schools must open. And I'm really concerned because the likelihood in many parts of the country, in many big cities, is pretty low. They're making decisions. They're getting really close. I think here in New York, they're talking this week in Chicago, August 7th. But they're dropping enough hints that you get a pretty good idea of where we are. What we don't get a good idea of is what parents are going to do when they don't get what they pay for from their government. Already, LA, Atlanta, Houston, DC, many other big cities have flat out said 100% remote learning is what they're going to get. We're going to get in the fall. And then you have most other big cities, Chicago, New York, Philly, and a lot of others saying they're probably going to do a hybrid model. And my concern is that those we've tasked to come up with the solution are not weighing all of the options, positives and risks that need to go into the decision. There is understandably lots of focus being given to the virus. That same level of focus is not being given to the concerns and problems that will arise from the kids being at home. Now, we won't know until later on because it's a cause and effect thing. But common sense says that for some portion of students, staying at home will cause psychological and physical problems for them. Why aren't we talking about what those are and trying to figure out what percentage we think will be affected by that and weighing that against the COVID concerns to decide what is actually best? The young children, a large part of their learning is social interaction. So with that gone, how is that going to affect, you know, kindergarten, first grader, second grader, to not be able to see their friends or see another kid their age for what's already been 5 months, losing a whole year of that social development? Physical, not being able to run around and play. You can say they can go outside, but most of the things are closed. There's no, very few camps. There's no gyms. They close the pools in a lot of places. Beaches are open with no lifeguards. A lot of the summer for these children are gone. And let's be real. If the virus is truly as big of a risk as they say it is, then should the kids be doing those things or having play dates? You know, if you can't go to church and you can't go to school, you probably shouldn't be going over Sally's house. So now there they are left without any interaction with other children. The older kids may have a better shot with the remote learning from a curriculum standpoint, but who's really going to enforce them showing up if they don't want to? Parents are working, the ones fortunate enough to be able to work from home and they're there, but they're working so they can't be doing the teaching and working at the same time. So now you got children who are mostly ignored during the day. You're going to have some attendance issues. I know when they were doing remote learning in the spring in California, over 20% of the students just simply never logged on. Then you have a segment of population that just learn better in person. Some of these kids, I know friends, to be honest, I got friends, I know people who said their kids thrived in the remote learning scenario. But there's going to be a portion of them who struggle. What happens to them? I don't know, COVID. Children with disabilities. Now they'll say, we'll carve out an exception for them. But the more exceptions you get, I thought the virus was the important thing and you shouldn't be around people. So there's that. And then you're going to have, we complain in this country since everything's circled around race and or class. You talk about the haves and the have nots. Those who live in a certain wealthy neighborhood and have a certain income will be able to supplement whatever little the school system gives them because they can afford it. I know people who are just moving out of town and just buying homes in different areas. They're waiting to see where the schools will be open and they're moving there. Everybody can't do that. Most people can't do that. Maybe they'll come up with ideas and they'll call up all the other parents and say, who wants to have a little group of students come in together, learn together in person on their own, and then hire somebody to do it. Working class parents won't be able to do that. Speaking of working class parents, what about those who have to go to work and their work has to be in person? You know, essential workers. Grocery store workers, Amazon delivery people, people who work in the hospital. You'll say they must be doing that now, so they must be taking their kids to daycare or whatever. So where's the outbreak there? What is the difference between a daycare and a school? They say it's hard to have young kids put on a mask and expect them to wear a mask all day, which I agree with. It's going to be difficult. But if it's so both difficult to do and likely that they will contract the virus if they don't, what happens at nurseries and daycares where babies aren't wearing masks, where toddlers are crawling around and they're not wearing masks? Why aren't all those kids sick? No one talks about that. They talk about it all. Let's figure it out. And lastly, I just did a whole segment on crime. It's been all over the news nationally about these children getting killed in Atlanta and Chicago and New York and all these cities. If that is the case, what do you think the results would be of having tens of thousands more teenagers on the streets with nothing to do? Many of them, latchkey, right? Parents got to go to work. No supervision. What? Okay, you'll say, but the suburban kids and those, some of the other kids who don't live in these neighborhoods, they'll be fine. They won't be on the streets. Yeah, but we're already complaining about how this generation spends too much time on a device, on social media, on their phone, go hang out with their friend, and they just look down on, at their phone while they're next to each other. So what is that going to do when they're, the amount of time they have on the screen is exponentially increased? So they have no supervision and no one telling them to stop, so they're playing more Halo. But then when they're not, they go into another device to school. School is now a device. All of these are also problems, not discounting COVID, just saying talk about those too. But let's get back to COVID. Infection rate. Let's talk about New York. So the governor is looking quite moderate and normal compared to the mayor with no pants. So Cuomo said he's ready to go. He said he set a threshold of 5% infection rate. They got the trackers. They're good to go. And they say if they don't go over 5% when schools, by the time schools start, they can start. If school is open and they go over 5%, he gives them a little window from 5 to 9%. After 9%, they hit 9%, the schools have to shut back down. Now, I'm not saying whether I agree with that or don't agree with that, but it, you know, it's a plan. It's an idea based on where you are. You need all the numbers. Now, the mayor with no pants said, that's not good enough. I want to set it at 3%. Okay. Does anybody out there go look it up, know what the infection rate has been in New York? They're doing a rolling 14-day testing where they test people every day. And for the last 3 days, it averaged around 1%. The low was 0.99 and the high was 1.08. So if that is a full third of the percentage that de Blasio wants, why am I thinking that the schools still won't open in New York? Because he hasn't come up with his plan, but he leaked a little bit of it. And it was, if one kid in the class, they're going to keep them in one class instead of moving around. If one kid in that class gets COVID, then we close the classroom for 2 weeks and we quarantine. If two kids in the school get it, school shuts down. What are the chances? If even with a 1% infection rate, that's probably lower for kids because kids are less likely to pass it on and get infected. But still, if you got a school with 1,000 people, you know, 1% is 8 people. You're going to get 2 people at some point with the virus. I'm not saying that no one's going to contract it. It's going to happen. So the question is, if we follow what's been leaked about de Blasio's plan, then his intention is never to open the schools. These schools need to be open. They need to find a way to fix it and deal with it and do their jobs. And if they don't want to do that, they cannot kowtow to the unions. The unions, the employees don't run the school. And if they do listen to them and not open the schools, because going 100% remote is not opening the schools, then parents need to rise up and demand that we get our tax dollars back so we can do, so that way you make a level playing field with those working class parents. You give them their, in Chicago, $14,000 for the school year and say, you go find a private school that opens, or you go find this, or you find a sitter. It gives you some flexibility when you have no control over anything that's happening. But will the people in charge do that? Of course not, because it means they have to give up some of their power. Call. Do what you have to do. The decisions are coming. If you live in somewhere where they haven't decided, you need to reach out to them and tell them how important it is for these schools to open. It's important for the future of these
kids. This is a Kevin Jackson radio show.
There's a new Home Depot now open on Maurice Avenue in Maspeth. And as home improvement projects go, this is a big one. Use the product locator on our app for an in-store map to find what you need fast. And check out our new pickup lockers. They make online shopping a breeze. Of course, one thing's not new, our everyday low prices. The Home Depot, now open near Maurice Avenue and Long Island Expressway in Maspeth, and always open at homedepot.com. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
This is the Kevin Jackson Radio Show.
Con Kevino Jacksones.
Guess what? Crime is still in the news. You're listening to The Kevin Jackson Show, sitting in for Kevin, Charles Love, Assistant Executive Director of Seeking Educational Excellence. So this crime is getting so bad that you can just have a daily segment the crime segment, kind of like cities have their blotters. So you can just do a police blotter. You can just do the national police blotter and talk about what's going on. Chicago had another violent weekend. Dozens of people shot, several people killed, a couple kids. And it just doesn't stop. And like I always say, there's no one talking solutions. The solutions are long term, though. It's not like I'm saying that it's a quick and easy fix, but it doesn't start until you start facing the facts, and we haven't reached that point yet. Yesterday, when I was talking about crime, I talked about Chicago specifically and talked about how it's different than other cities. And I said something about New York and LA having far more people and fewer shootings in Chicago. Didn't have any raw numbers. It wasn't really anecdotal. I knew it to be a fact, but I didn't have numbers right in front of me at the time. And looking at the weekend crime, I had some numbers here I wanted to share with you. So keep in mind, we are still going along that unfortunate theme of crime is rising everywhere, so it's relative to where it is. I think the percentage is higher in New York than it is in Chicago, but Chicago was starting from a higher point, so its lower percentage still ends up with a higher number. And it's other cities as well, but you look at the big three. New York City has 777 shootings already as of the beginning of August, has surpassed last year's number, 777. LA has 706 shootings. So just to tie a bow around what I was saying yesterday, so LA and New York, as of now, for 2020, has 1,483 shootings combined. Roughly 15 million people between the two cities, 1,400 shootings. Chicago, after this last violent weekend, has 2,345 shootings. There's a special problem in Chicago that we need to address. Not to say that several hundred people shot in any city is good, but when that city has that level of shooting and it continues nonstop week in, week out, every weekend, every day. I remember, obviously, I mentioned before that I just moved to New York from there. I want to say it was either last year to end of 18. They had a news story one day. It was technically good news, but if you think about it, it's pretty sobering. The headline read that there was a day in Chicago where no one got shot. Not just no one killed, no one shot. And that was like, wow, we didn't know we could do it. Hooray, we did it. But here, I watched the local news here in New York, and not to be outdone by Chicago, they said, okay, fine, you have more shootings than we do. But we've had our drive-bys. I played a clip before about a teenager getting shot and killed as somebody just drove down the street in broad daylight, sticking their head and their gun out the sunroof and shooting people. But the last couple nights, I watched the news and they're talking about stabbings. There's been several stabbings. There was one guy, he didn't get killed, but he was walking through Prospect Park in Brooklyn, got stabbed. And in too many cases, they don't catch anyone. So if you want to talk about how to solve it, you need to talk about the root cause, which is the culture, not all the other things that people talk about, and what some of those solutions may be. But what I find interesting is that very few on the left talk about it at all. I mean, people, I don't call them the left, even though they may be the left. They're not representing the left or talking leftists at the time when they do it. When you see people in those communities come out and say, this needs to stop, we need to do something about this, you know, that's just the people who are most closely impacted by it. But the politicians, the people in Washington, the journalists, the elites, they don't talk about this. In fact, you are vilified for talking about it. And those on the right, they talk about it, and then they get beat up because they say, why do you want to bring this up? You don't really care. You're only saying that to combat the argument about police brutality. And in a way, I'm with them on that. You know, they say that you shouldn't, that police brutality has nothing to do with black on black crime. So when they're out protesting and people say, why are you protesting this one shooting when there are so many people getting shot every day? And they'll scream back, well, there are two different subjects. Doesn't mean you can't address them, bro, both. But I'll give them that. I'll say technically they're different. But again, giving them their argument, you have to make them think. So if you're going to say that I'm talking about police brutality, so you talking about black on black crime doesn't mean I'm okay with it. That's just a different subject. So then you have to say, when you do talk about the crime in the communities or what is best for the black communities, you can't keep bringing up the police because the police are not the problem. The police aren't shooting all these people in all these cities. You can say they're not doing enough to solve the problem. You know, let's say the murder close rates are abysmal in Chicago. I'll give you that. They're in the 20th percentile. But you're not going to solve that partially by people in the community not trusting the police and not willing to, you know, cooperate or snitch, as they say. But you're also not going to solve it by defunding the police and having fewer police in the community. On the last segment, I was talking about Anderson Cooper's interview with Tyler Perry. And I think the last segment we were talking about defunding the police. And I forgot to mention, and to tie that in, that they said something about, I was giving him credit, Tyler Perry, for saying that he didn't want to defund the police. He wanted more money. But both he and Anderson talked about how we both know that it doesn't mean what they say it means. You know, it was a wink and a nod to conservatives saying they say it means bad things for police. It says it means we don't have confidence or belief in the police. They say it means abolish the police. And then Tyler Perry says, well, I thought it was bad, but then I did my homework. Did he really? Because I did my homework, too, working on a book about it. And I can tell you that there is a strain within the left Marxist belief. Full organizations, several of them out there, that want the police abolished, not just defunded. And they do mean don't fund the police so that they can't do X, Y, and Z. So this crime is going to continue to go up until you're willing to talk about what the issue is. And it's all the things that they hate conservatives to talk about. And it's not just because they talk about leftist policies or the Democrat Party or X, Y, Z. It's culture. It's the family. It's the morals that are gone. It's having negative views about religion, saying that religious people are all bigots and they don't care about anyone else and they're not inclusive enough. It's this old conservative bourgeois values are bad. It's we can't judge other people. It's not holding people accountable. We just need some people to just stand up and say, I don't want violence in my community. I want them in jail. It's that snitching code in the community that you don't cooperate with the police. So it's going to be a long way back from that, but we're going to keep hearing about these numbers until somebody says or does something about it. One of those kids I meant to mention, I want to leave you with this, Caleb Reed, saw both sides of this. The 17-year-old that was killed in West Rogers Park of Chicago, neighborhood in Chicago, he made the news just weeks before for supporting defunding the police and removing them from his school. So I'm not celebrating what happens, of course, but you have to understand that we're not guiding these people in the proper ways. He spent his time and his energy focusing on removing the police from his school because it's a danger to the children and was gunned down in his neighborhood. Let's just hope that's one murder the Chicago police are able to solve.
This is the Kevin Jackson Radio Show.